When people get into multiple car accidents over time, why do we call them reckless? Shouldn't we call them wreckful? If a man with no arms has a gun, is he really armed? And do dogs destroy shoes because they see humans put them on before they leave the house? All these questions and more on the Abnormal Matters podcast.
I am so glad you were so good at this.
I like the no arm guy.
Oh yeah, for sure. That is the best.
Well, welcome back, folks. Good evening, good afternoon, whenever you're listening. It's evening for us this time around.
I was trying to think of the Truman Show thing that he says.
Oh, yeah. What does he say? I forget. It's been so long since I've seen that thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, welcome to the Abnormal Matters podcast, where we always look into the strange and the odd. And we have me, obviously, one of the co-hosts, Ian. We have Rachel. And we have
a very special guest. My mother.
Yay!
Leanne Raining from Indiana, spending her last night with us podcasting.
Ooh.
So, we've got an interesting one for you, especially with the news that has been popping up around with the freaking weather balloons or
alien takedowns.
Chinese spy balloons or whatever they're trying to say they are.
It was really Allstate trying to contact us about our car's extended warranty.
Yeah.
Who's the final authority on who what it is?
I don't know. The last that I heard, it was from Canada, right near the border, and they were setting up weather balloons. And, I mean, they had a big, like, hooray, like a whole bunch of crowd and everything watching these things take off. And we said, what the fuck is that?
Yeah. And why would you want to be over Myrtle Beach?
We spent, we spent $400,000 shooting one down.
Merca.
Blew the smoke off the top of that missile.
Yeah.
I wonder who the first person was that reported that.
Well, it started from, evidently, it started from Canada and then went down.
And everybody called the police.
Followed the jet stream.
Jeez.
But tonight's episode is about the Blue Book Project and just the odd and strange of how that came about. And we're going to dive into a little bit of some of the mass sightings across the U.S. that have been around.
Yeah, and some of the more famous ones that they looked into during this Blue Book Project.
But before we start, of course, I got to give you the science news of the week. And Miss Rachel, what you got for us?
So, you know, I find all the kooky things. Man dies after taking loaded concealed gun into an MRI scan.
Where did he conceal it?
I don't know. You'll find out in a second. So, a man has died of his injuries after taking a concealed weapon into an MRI room. 40-year-old lawyer.
He's a lawyer.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Leandro Mathias de Novas, you should have read that, allegedly took a gun with him when accompanying his mother to an appointment concealed under his waistband. Both the patient and her companion were properly instructed regarding the procedures for assessing the examination room and warned about the removal of any metallic objects. The firearm was not mentioned by the companion who entered in the examination room with the object by his decision. Well, we all know how MRI machines work, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's radio waves and it's a magnetic field. Yes. According to the reports, the gun advocate's weapon was pulled out of his waistband by the machine before it discharged into his stomach.
Oh shit.
He had a license to carry the weapon, but it is not clear why he didn't remove it prior to entering the machine. Before his death on February 6th, he regularly posted pro-gun content on his TikTok channel, according to the New York Post. Here's this last sentence that literally just blew my mind. People have been fatally sucked into MRI machines before, generally when metal oxygen tanks have been brought in with patients.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine? What?
Those things are so powerful. That, I mean, that's, they should have a huge disclaimer about metal, because those things...
Well, you've got to take off your rings, earrings, everything. Everything. So why would you think it was okay
to just keep your gun in your waistband?
Yeah. I wonder what they do with, like, somebody that has hip replacement or has, like, metal inside them.
You know, I don't know, I mean, if they can even have an
MRI on them, because that just gets sucked out of them.
Right.
Or they, bing!
Like, I think they have to do other tests on them, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's like Stargate opening. When an MRI machine goes off, like that loud-ass noise, yeah, it's like Stargate opening. Why would you think, I'm just going to keep my gun right here?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just in case something happens.
Right. Somebody's going to walk in here.
I wonder what the technicians were thinking.
They probably ducked and covered.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay, but here's the... And I want to know the science behind this, because I guess it kind of makes sense in my head that it went off. Right. Because it like even like a hairpin trigger,
yeah,
and the gun isn't moving, but that metal wants to move as the pin, the trigger, and bam,
yeah,
and it went off.
Yeah, but apparently it sounds like the MRI machine was pulling it out of his waistband, and then probably when it got fully out of his waistband, slid the trigger back and shot him in the stomach.
Wow.
Well, okay, depends on where he had it. If he had it concealed, let's just say he had it concealed in the front. Right? If he had it right there and it was pulling and it couldn't pull, but the trigger itself was wanting to still go, bang, it would just automatically right there.
It sounds like he didn't have time to react.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like he fucked around and found out. I'm so sorry. Like, you know.
You say he died?
He did. I'm sorry.
Oh, he got shot in the stomach.
Yeah. But
you're in a hospital.
I mean, I don't know what kind of injuries.
I just wonder what the technicians.
Like no, it's like literally before his death. So, but yeah, like he fucked around and found out.
Oh,
for sure.
Gosh.
Well, our condolences
to the family.
But if they say no metal, you might want to listen.
Yeah,
it'd be like trying to take a gun through airport security.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
Ain't no way. Ain't no way. Here's your sign. No guns at the hospital.
Yeah. It's almost like the gun was like, you didn't fucking listen, did you? Bam!
Right, right. I have taught you a lesson.
Wow.
There you go.
Gun safety, y'all.
Yes.
I'm not a gun person, but sorry. They tell you no metal.
Right. Yeah. We have small kids, so guns in our house are not an option, but definitely if we did have them, safety 100%. Yeah.
I can't imagine taking them to a doctor appointment where you're going to get tests.
Aren't you not supposed to have guns in a hospital? Like, don't they?
I'm pretty sure you're not.
Yeah.
You have to go through a metal detector.
Now, it didn't say, like, what country this was in, but I would assume that it's not United States.
What was the name again?
I already clicked out of the tab.
It was really long and complicated. That's all we know.
Did it sound Spanish?
Yeah, well, the guy's name was Spanish, but it did not... it was on I Fucking Love Science.
Yeah, I love that webpage.
I do, too. That's my go-to for every week. Now everybody knows my secret. Damn it.
Well, good science news of the week. Weird.
Not as good as odd. The no armed guy that stabbed people.
Yeah, that was a great one.
What? What did I miss?
Should have listened to the podcast.
She downloaded it for you. Check it out.
No, it's Jack the Ripper. You have to go back and listen to it. That was the best science news of the week.
Okay.
A no armed man was armed and was able to stab
somebody.
Yeah.
In Florida. It always happens in Florida.
Yeah.
Like Florida, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, like 80% of our weird science news is out of Florida.
Okay.
Yeah. We need to just do a whole podcast, like we said before, what happens in Florida.
Yeah.
Nobody would believe it.
All the weird shit happens there. Anywho.
But yeah, the Blue Book, the Blue Book Project. Try to say it three times real fast. That is our topic for the night, and I have a little bit of a just a synopsis, and then we can kind of get into it.
Sounds good.
All right. So the Blue Book Project was a U.S. government-run investigation into reports of unidentified flying objects and extraterrestrial life. It was conducted by the U.S. Air Force and ran from 1952 to 1969. And there are some key events in the timeline related to the Blue Book Project. Of course, you know, 1947 was before it started in 1952, but that was the first widely reported UFO sighting occurring in Roswell, New Mexico. And then shit started stirring up at that point, and everybody was like, I seen a UFO. And then in 1952, the Air Force launched Project Blue Book to investigate reports of UFO sightings and to determine if they pose a threat to our national security. In 1953, the CIA became involved in it also, in the investigations. 1958, the Air Force released its first reports on the Blue Book Project, concluding that most UFO sightings can be explained and misidentifications of natural phenomena or man-made objects are the case in these sightings, which, again, we all know. I mean, back then, I'll just pause right there real quick. Back then, people believed in the government. Whatever Correct. The government said, oh, yeah, that's what it is.
And that's pretty much what, and I know we're jumping ahead a little bit and we'll get it, but that's pretty much what this whole Project Blue Book was about, is like, we're going to make them trust and believe that there was nothing occurring. And so the numbers you can get about this, which is like the 12,618 sightings, actually were from 1947. So everything that's in the reports, even though Project Blue Book was only from 1952 to 1969, they count in Project Blue Book the numbers from 1947
from
on. Roswell. Yep. So there was 12,618 sightings were reported and 701 remain unidentified. That's a pretty significant number.
Yeah. That's a good percentage.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the outliers, yes, that is a very high percentage of, they couldn't find an excuse.
Right. And we're not talking now, the Project Blue Book is kind of still in effect, and it's just basically civilians that are doing this research. But you're talking during this time frame, 1952 to 1969, you have Wright, all the officials from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. You have the CIA involved. They form the Robertson panel. You have all of these people that are scientific, mind-based. And if they're telling you during that time, 701 of these were unexplainable, that's a huge red flag.
Where was I in my timeline?
Sorry.
No, you're fine. 1960, the Air Force conducts a study on the psychological effects of UFO sightings and finds that people who report sightings often have high levels of anxiety and fear. If you saw some fucking shit in the sky that you couldn't explain, don't you think you'd have a little bit of anxiety and fear?
Yes.
Duh.
Yep.
The Air Force releases in 1963 another report stating that there is no evidence of any threat to national security posed by UFO sightings. But we fast forward to today, and we've got Commander Favor.
Right.
With the Tic Tac.
Yep.
We have the Gimbal. Favor was off the West Coast. We got the Gimbal on the East Coast. And that footage, and that's military footage.
Right.
Of an unknown flying object.
From a fighter jet.
Yeah. Yeah, that can't keep up with it.
Right. You would have never heard of that stuff being released 20 years ago.
Oh, hell no.
Never happened.
No, and pilots were afraid to come forward because
Everybody was.
They'd be decommissioned. They wouldn't be able to fly.
Yes. Right. You're batshit crazy. Get out of the jet. You've had too many G-forces.
Right. But again, you're not sticking a derelict in a $44 million jet.
Right.
So these people are sound of mind.
Correct.
You know, and
you have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. but anyway, a 1966, a private organization called the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, the NICAP, is formed to investigate UFO sightings independently. So now they're starting to branch off
right
away from the government to try to get more of a non-biased look at it, or even just a different view, simple different view than what they were.
I think by that time the Air Force, they were just shooting down everything. They were, there's no such thing.
Weather balloon.
Yes.
It's Venus.
Even police officers that saw things, they were saying, no, you were chasing a satellite or a planet. Their job was to debunk every single thing.
Mm-hmm. But the finally in 1969, the Blue Book Project is officially closed and its files are declassified. The Air Force concludes that there is no evidence of any technology or phenomena that are beyond the limits of conventional science. Despite the conclusions of the Project Blue Book, many people still believe that UFO sightings represent evidence of extraterrestrial life, and the project remains the subject of much debate and speculation to this day. So here's my timeline for you.
It's insane.
Yeah. Yes.
It's crazy. So we have what? During that time, in 1952, the first main incident where the CIA gets involved are the lights over Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. where they have these blips showing up on the radar that are unexplainable. And they fly down from...
And at a high rate of speed.
Correct, correct. And then they have the jets fly down. It happened two weekends. Trying not to click too much. But it... happened across two weekends, basically in July of 1952. Well, I can't find it. Anyway, it was two weekends back to back. So the first weekend, it was a couple of blips. They send fighter jets down, and fighter jets can't keep up with them. Can't find them. The blips disappear basically once the fighter jets arrive. The very next weekend, same thing happens. That it was Reagan Airport, which is right on the Potomac. Or is that Washington Dulles? I think Reagan is the one that's on the Potomac.
Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah. I think I could be wrong. But anyway, the lights are again. And there are tons of people that are seeing them, not just on the radar. And then they're phoning other airports, radar, news stations that have weather radar. It's all being captured on the radar. And that's when the CIA gets involved. And then that's when you have our the key players from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base that come in. And
which, supposedly, with the Roswell crash, that's where all the UFO stuff went to.
Right, right.
They shipped it from the crash site to Wright-Patterson.
Right, right. And then you have... I was looking at the wrong page. That's what I get for not keeping my tabs in order. We also have the Lubbock lights, which were actually in 1951, but this is a, which is even before technically the Project Blue Book, right? But again,
Texas?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So again, we're documenting serious sightings from 1947 to 1952, and the Lubbock lights were one of those. And then, in 1952 is when the CIA gets involved and does this, the panel, to review these.
And start the Blue Book program.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
But a lot of time, their goal was to not cause a panic.
Right.
Well, yeah,
right.
You got to keep the cattle docile.
Yes. So even though you had hundreds of people seeing these, you had... people picking this up on radar, pilots, policemen, they would say, no, 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 it's something else, because they were afraid of widespread panic.
So the National Archives are amazing. I'm sure there are plenty of history buffs that are listeners out here that have viewed the National Archives before. And as stuff gets released, it's amazing to go back and look at this, because these lights that we're talking about that you could see over Washington, D.C., were viewed over Salem, Massachusetts. And somebody got a picture, a guy from the Coast Guard, a Coast Guard photographer got pictures of these lights. So they were going all the way up and down the coast. It's just, there's too much facts. There's too much evidence. There's my word, to disregard these sightings.
Well, that's why it closed, is the public lost. They lost all the public's trust because all these things were happening. People were getting pictures and everything else, and they just said, nope, it's...
They couldn't conceal it anymore.
Yes. Nobody trusts them no more.
What is the case, and I just had the light bulb moment, the lady's dress is in the Smithsonian, where the man and the wife were driving down the road.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, her name was Betty.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. And they lost time.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think her dress and the car is in the Smithsonian. Why are we storing these things if we don't believe that something happened?
They tried everything to discredit these people, and they just could not.
Why does Hollywood portray aliens always as, well, they don't always, but the majority is that it's hostile takeover. They're out to get us.
Independence Day.
Right? So... are they prepping us for something?
Look at the movies of the 50s and 60s. It was all about, you know,
the day the world ended.
They're out. They're here to somehow hijack our planet for water or fuel. Mm-hmm. Or even in the, was it Twilight Zone episode? To serve man. And it was a cookbook. Remember that? You guys don't remember that?
Oh, but they did a parody of that on The Simpsons.
They did?
Yeah, it was like.
Oh, yes, they did. Yes.
Like. The aliens had how to eat humans or whatever, cookbook for humans.
Yes.
But there was that radio show, too, in the 1950s, wasn't it? 50s or 60s?
Where No, that was back in the late 30s.
Really?
It was Orson Welles. War of the Worlds, yes. And he got in so much trouble for that. And there was panic. There were people packing their families in their cars and taking off. I think it took place in New Jersey. The play did. And there was a nationwide panic.
I bet. Because the only thing you have, and I think, like, this era, 1950s, you're getting, people are not only getting, you know, household cameras, right? You have household cameras. People are getting TVs. There's all of these things that you can visually see and then reproduce and get out into a mass market. And when you have black and white, it's in black and white, right? You start to believe it. And that's where I think, you know, the government's like, nope, we got to put it into this. We have to put it into this. You need to trust us. There are so many more. What other cases do you have? Because I'm getting all excited. And
sidetracked. Well, we were talking about just, you know, when it started and everything. I just wanted to kind of talk about a little bit of the key individuals.
Yes.
That actually were a part of this Blue Book project. Edward Ruppelt, he was the first head of Project Blue Book and served in that role from 1952 to 53. He's known for his efforts to professionalize the investigation of the UFO sightings and his advocacy for scientific studies of the phenomenon. Fuck yeah.
Right.
Like, he's out there like, okay, it's unidentified. Let's really find out what the hell this is.
Right, because the other people, I don't think, were taking it as serious.
And I think they gave that guy a staff of like 10 people. And I don't know if it was him or the guy after him that developed the survey. They went to, I think, a university and developed a survey.
That was Hynek.
Was it?
Yeah.
Hynek, he was an astronomer. And a consultant. He was actually from Ohio State University. He worked for the Air Force and on Project Blue Book for many years. He's known for the evolution from a skeptic to a believer.
Yep.
And the reality of UFO sightings, and is considered by many to be the father of UFOlogy.
He did a lot of work. I think he wrote a book, too, after he retired.
He did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What I think is really awesome about Ruppelt is... he took it so serious that basically he was given the okay to interview any and all military personnel who witnessed UFOs, and they weren't, he was not required to follow a chain of command. Like, he could literally walk up to anyone. And you, I mean, chain of command is very important, obviously, in the military. Sure. And, you know, somebody couldn't walk in the door and talk to one of Mike's soldiers without talking to him first. So this is like, especially when this is the military we're coming out of, what, World War II?
Yeah, and the Korean War.
And the Korean War, where military is supreme. And this guy was just like, I don't have, he does not have to follow chain of command. You answer every question he has.
Mm-hmm. He took it serious. He did it professionally. He had a good staff. He handpicked his staff. He didn't make people feel like, you know, well,
they were crazy.
Years. Yeah, there for years. They made it so people were, like, even pilots, they were afraid to say anything. And this guy was a different, and what happened then? He left. He went someplace and he came back and they'd gotten rid of his staff.
I don't remember the end story.
Diminished the office a whole lot.
I don't remember the end story on how he dismissed. I think he was dismissed after he did leave. But I don't know, when he tried to come back, he got dismissed or something like that.
So he left temporary for a temporary assignment. And then when he returned a few months later, so this is 1953. So we're only in official, basically a year of Project Blue Book. And he returned a few months later to find his staff reduced from more than 10 to 2 subordinates. So he left. Hmm.
And then every person that ran it after that, their whole agenda was, there's nothing to this. No matter what it is, who says it, there's nothing to this. There's no such thing.
Well, he because, actually turned it over to the military personnel. Yes. It was the 4602 Air Intelligence Service Squadron.
But this guy took it serious.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And that, and after he left, it was according to like the final reports and that kind of stuff, that in addition to all these key individuals, you know, the Blue Book Project was also involved. Also involved a team of military personnel and civilian scientists who help investigate and analyze the data collected during the course of the project, but it fizzled out once he left, mm-hmm. like you're saying. And at that point, regardless of the reports and their investigations, they weren't doing them correctly. There was a lot of criticism on how they were actually reporting all this stuff and recording. Sometimes some stuff was left out, and it was just highly criticized, you know, just the methodology
yes.
of the U.S. Air Force and how to categorize these UFOs. And it was just unreliable, that a lot of critics said.
And then once the civilian group really formed and started their own investigations, it really made the Air Force look bad. Mm-hmm. They made them look bad.
Here's something I found interesting going through the case files. So in 1947, 48, 49, 50, and 51, there were less than 210 sightings altogether. In 1952, there were 1,501 sightings. And then you go another 4 years, and in 1957, there was 1,006 sightings. And then it kind of, from 58 to 65, it averages about 500. What happened in those 2 years? Because, well,
the key thing, Rachel, is look at 1952.
Right.
303, unidentified.
Correct. That's what happened.
And they put new people in charge. And the new people in charge decided that everything was going to be dismissed. Just about everything was going to be dismissed. And that was their job. Their job was, we want all of these sightings explained, filed away, whatever you have to do. We have to get the public's trust. We don't want panic. You know, people, it's the Cold War. We're scared of everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And well, people did think that. Oh my gosh, it's the Russians, you know.
Did you ever hear anything about the Majestic 12?
Yes.
supposedly the director that started this,
yes,
was a part of the Majestic 12, the MJ-12. Did you hear about that, Rachel?
I did not.
They're saying, you know what? I did some research on that, and there are people that are saying with the Majestic 12 that they have found, through the Freedom Information Act, the documents. But then there's others that are saying they've looked at these documents and they're fake. Hmm. So I don't know.
Well, the MJ-12 project was a secret government program that is rumored to have established in the wake of the Roswell incident. Some conspiracy theorists have claimed that MJ-12 was involved in the cover-up of the evidence of extraterrestrial life and that it played a role starting with the Blue Book Project to try to dismiss everything.
People are still to this day looking for documentation. Still to this day.
It would be really dumb of us,
yep,
to assume that in this giant universe that we have, that we are the only source of life on this tiny little planet. In the big scheme of things. We would be stupid to assume that.
You just have to look at the Drake Theory.
What's that?
Ever heard of the Drake Theory?
Nope.
The only Drake I know is, you know.
Professor Drake from SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, based out of OSU, Ohio State University. He came up with a formula to explain that there's you're looking at the formula?
Yep.
So there's a formula to basically rule that there is, just in our galaxy alone, there are 50,000 planets just like the Earth, where it is the same distance in the Goldilocks zone from the sun, from its star.
Right.
That it's a habitable planet. Just all the different things. He came up with this equation and ran it through the process, and turns out there's more than 50,000 plus planets like Earth just in our galaxy. And then there's billions of galaxies.
Well, I think that a lot of people nowadays, now it was different when I was younger. When I was younger, it was, there is no such thing as UFOs, and yeah, you were drunk if you saw something or whatever. And you got, and now the attitude has changed.
Ate a handful of Quaaludes and saw some.
You know, I was telling Rachel, I was listening to, I think Joe Rogan, and he had the head of CIA, some big shot on there. And they were talking about, what is the Area 51 thing, whatever it's called.
Yeah, Area 51.
And they said, the only person that's outside the military that has the power to say, I want to see what's going on, is the President of the United States. Guess what president pushed that to the limit and wanted to know everything, what was going on, wanted Bill Clinton. To go. Guess again. Guess again. Guess again.
I'm just joking. Whoa.
I'm just joking. Trump.
Of course.
And but they he said, didn't get to go in.
Nope. They said they really, he was determined. They said they really had to put the, talk to him and talk to him and talk to him and said, there's just some things you don't need to know.
I think there's a lot of stuff that the government doesn't tell people and presidents because once you know, there's no going
back. Yes, and it would cause a panic.
Mm-hmm. For fucking sure.
But I think in today's day and age, if you saw something, you're driving down the road and you see some strange lights that you can't explain, you can tell people and you're not going to be made fun of. And it wasn't that way, you know, 10, 20 years
ago. Nobody would believe me. I'm drunk half the time.
See? That's why you don't say anything. Everybody's going to say, what are you drinking?
Right.
Mick Ultras.
But no, that Drake theory. So the number of planets with detectable signs of life is equal to the number of stars observed times the fraction of stars that are quiet times the fraction of stars with rocky planets with habitable zone times the fraction of those planets that can be observed times the fraction that have life times the fraction of which life produces a detectable signature gas. So he took all of these and compiled it just to our solar system and for our galaxy, sorry, and it came out to 50,000 plus Earths.
But even not knowing that, you know what I mean? Even not knowing that equation,
That's just to say habitable carbon life.
Right.
Like life that we would think would be out there.
So when our spaceships are, you know, our rockets and the, what is it? The station that's up there. What
the
fuck
is it called? The ISS.
Thank you. International Space Station. Thank you. Do other galactic or other planets look at that and say, that's a fucking UFO? Or we're not, well, we're too slow.
The problem is distance. Close that door. I mean, the problem is distance. Because let's talk, and I love getting into the geeky space shit. So, we have the sun. How far is the sun from the Earth, or the Earth from the sun? 93 million miles. We can't really, the human mind doesn't, you can say the word million.
But you don't realize you can't how much it is.
Fathom how far that is.
Yes.
And to put it into perspective, it takes 8.5 minutes for light from the sun to get to us. That's how far 93 million miles is. So the sun could explode and we wouldn't know it for 8.5 minutes.
I would prefer it that way.
But then we would start seeing the explosion after 8.5 minutes.
Say that.
But that's how, so then let's take, that's just a million miles, you know.
She's going to have so much fucking anxiety tonight.
Yeah, no kidding.
She already has anxiety.
I'll really break your noodle here in a minute. What's the closest star? The Alpha Centauri. How far is it? 4.3 light years away. How fast is a light year? 186,000 miles per second. Think about that. Per second. Not per hour. Per second. 186,000 miles.
Doesn't that scare you how vast everything 100%, is around 100%. Us, this tiny speck of dust?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that...
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'll wake sometimes thinking about the vastness of this all.
You think about that, it would take, with normal combustion that we have right now with rockets and shit, for us to go to the next star, not the sun, but the closest star to us, it would take 1,000 years. It would take 10 generations of people if they're living to 100.
Wow. But, you know, when you think about even 120 years ago, look where we were 120 years ago.
1900s.
Couldn't even put an airplane in the sky. Right. Look at where medicine was, and look how far we've come. Look at computers. I mean, it was stuff that was in nobody could even dream of.
Oh, this
in the past 100 years. Look at our progress.
This chat GPT shit's going to change everything.
What's that?
I told you about that.
Mm-hmm. The AI thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, it's really fucking cool.
It's really cool.
You ever hear about Elon Musk talk about artificial intelligence?
Oh, he doesn't trust it.
No, he does not.
But he created a fucking Tesla.
That's right.
That'll drive itself, yeah.
Exactly.
He does want to make the world a better place. He certainly does. But he also sees the implications of all of us walking around, even kids, walking around on phones. And kids, what do they watch on TV? They watch YouTube channels of kids playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to watching cartoons? It's insane.
Yeah.
Well, you can't show the Looney Tunes.
Anymore,
because they're too violent. Yeah.
Well, or they're, I don't know, they're racist or against women or who knows. They're against everything.
I didn't tell you this earlier, but we had somebody come in and raid the upstairs over the weekend. So when I came into my office this morning, because I was on vacation yesterday, because, you know, I have two monitors and then my laptop, my one monitor was broken. Hmm. All my shit was moved around. So I'm like, what the fuck's going on? So I talked to Liz, who's in the cube right next to me, and she said, oh, yeah, I came in Monday morning. Not only was my monitor unplugged, but somebody stole my earbuds. So I'm like, well, fuck this. This is bullshit. Somebody was in here messing with their stuff. So long story short, I figure out it's a bunch of people. And I was like, you know what we need to do is we need to do the old Roadrunner shit. Like, yes. Put an X on the ground, drop a boulder on somebody.
Put some birdseed.
Yeah. Free lunch.
We did grow up in simpler times, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, this ChatGPT, so they put it out to the public in November. And it's free. And you, it's made by OpenAI. And what it does is you can ask it whatever. And you can just be normal English. Like, what up, homie? I need an essay about World War II. And it needs to be at least 1,500 words. And it'll say, all right, no problem. And it just starts writing it. Right?
So is this a like a computer?
It's an AI.
It's a computer program, yeah.
It's okay. A computer program. So it'll replace a lot of programmers' jobs. Because, I mean, I write in Java. I write in JavaScript and C#, those different kind of languages. So I just was trying to test it, and I said, and there's when you're starting out in programming, you always learn a program called Hello World. And all it is just, you're getting the system to pull up a window and it says, Hello World. Like, you're like, yay, I wrote a program. You know what I mean? Like, I actually had it made do something, you know? Well, I tried to make it a little bit more complicated for it. So I said, write me a program in Java that will ask the user its birthday, prompt the user for its birthday, for their birthday. And then I want you to ask them a future year, and then you're going to predict what day their birthday is going to land on. And it wrote the program out. And I double checked it. I put it into my for running programs and stuff. I hit run, I copied and pasted it, put it in there, and sure enough, it did it right.
So there has got to be, I think the whole point of this is, there's got to be...
Maybe artificial intelligence is getting too far ahead of what we can cope with or think about.
It will eventually. It's still under our control right now. But...
Who's to say that AI isn't alien technology and other...
It's artificial.
How'd they build the pyramids? They're still asking that. They still haven't figured that out yet.
It's aliens, duh.
But what I'm trying to get at with this ChatGPT is that the more that people use it, the more it learns.
Oh, the smarter it gets.
The smarter it gets. Because I could say, write that essay about World War II, right? Well, what if I'm in sixth grade and I don't use those big fancy words, right?
Right.
So then after it writes it, it remembers what you're still talking about. You don't need to be like, write me a World War II. You can just be like, shorten it and write it like a 12-year-old. And it'll write it like a 12-year-old would, with a 12-year-old's vocabulary.
That's some scary implications. I mean, what do kids have to learn?
Can we pause for a moment?
Yeah.
Mom, we can resume.
We can continue. But yeah, I mean, and who's to say that our first encounter with aliens will be biological? What do we do when we first shot something up into space? Was it biological? Ooh, it was a machine. Voyager, Carl Sagan, right? The Golden Disk,
right?
It's past our solar system now.
Is that the one that's got the tape recordings in it or something? Disc, and it's got writing on it?
Yep.
And voice recordings?
Yep. And sounds
that's
from the
Earth. That's always bugged me.
Sounds from the Earth and telling us where we're located.
Yes.
And all that stuff.
So we just gave somebody like our exact coordinates.
Yeah, we did.
How long ago was that?
The 70s.
I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was thinking at the time, oh, it's going to be so weird. Some alien's going to find us and...
It's going to find the disc and know exactly where we're at.
And then that movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out. I'll tell you what, that movie just scared me to death on so many levels. I know right now people watch it, I'm like, that's not scary. Yeah, it was. Back then it was.
Yeah.
So do we think that the government is still trying to cover up
no
aliens?
Somewhat.
I think somewhat sure that they're trying to keep a lid on how much they really know.
Correct.
The other biggest thing, so besides government, right? Who else wants power or control? Religions.
Correct.
Right? Guess what the Vatican has?
A vast library of past thing, or, you know, every written...
The most expensive telescope ever made. And that they have it in Arizona, out in the desert, where there's no light pollution or anything. And they have bought this area and have this telescope out. But what the fuck did the Vatican...
Correct.
That's a good question.
Looking out into this outer space. Trust them.
I think that they're letting us know more by, you know, just all the videos I see of Air Force pilots and the stuff that they're releasing that they're capturing on the radar. I never imagined I'd ever see that. The Air Force saying, hey, look what this pilot caught. And then the audio from the pilots.
Yeah, because they were fucking shitting
bricks. They were freaking out. Right. I never thought that the government... But so you got to ask yourself, why would the government be okay with that?
I think their hand is forced because you have so many people with what in their hands. You have a device in your hand.
I think technology has pushed the their and hand.
Paranormal.
Caught on camera.
Exactly.
Every single week there's more and more stuff. We've had an experience. I've had two. Traumatic experiences. One with Rachel, one with my other daughter.
I was very little.
Well, let's pause real quick. Have a smoky treat.
Okay, sounds
and
good.
And then we'll hear.
The time of the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
That's about 3,000 years, isn't it? Tell me if I'm wrong. Because
a little more than that.
Okay. Do you think that they had help?
Me, personally?
Yes.
I think so.
And in South America, where they have those giant things.
The holes?
Like the spider that you can only see from so
that's
many...
That's Africa.
In South America.
Yeah.
The Nazca lines.
What's the deal with that?
And they looks like they have runways and that kind of stuff, yeah.
And they proved that there were ancient civilizations doing brain surgery.
Have you ever heard of the Anunnaki?
From?
Just that phrase, the Anunnaki.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, I'm old. Come on.
Sorry. No, that's what this...
I've heard of everything once in a while.
That's what this tattoo is. This tattoo is from roughly about 5,000 BC.
From where?
From Sumeria. From the Sumerians. Middle East.
Okay, I'm trying to place it.
The
Well, don't they think that's the cradle of our civilization is the Middle East?
Exactly. So, I'll give you a quick synopsis.
Where they think... I want to ask you about this. The Bible.
Okay. I'm going to get to it.
Can we finish the podcast first?
Okay.
Please.
Yeah, let's hear the story.
Yes.
And then we'll get into that.
Okay.
So, story time.
All right. So, there is the new season. We talked about this of Unsolved Mysteries. Mm-hmm. And the very first episode is about the lights over the Great Lakes. And I had to call my mom. Because I was like, Mom, you have to watch this episode. It is insane. So what happened? Mom can tell it probably a little better, but we were coming home picking up my brother from a Cub Scout thing.
Yeah.
And I remember her being freaked out, kind of, and trying not to be freaked out because there's kids in the car, as you do when you're a parent.
Yeah.
And there were lights in the sky. There were lights in the sky, bright ass lights in the sky over Lake Michigan. And I remember laying in the floorboard of the car on the way home. And I would not get out of the car when we got home.
Kids were petrified.
And it's a very famous thing. It happened from Michigan to Chicago?
I think they were seen off the coast of Lake Michigan around Chicago, but it was into little towns in Michigan. It was in Indiana. Trying to think of the name of the town in Indiana. I can't. But what we saw that night, we lived in on the outskirts of towns. We were in a very rural area. It was all woods.
What year is this?
Early 90s.
Okay.
And my son was in Boy Scouts, and he had the Pinewood Derby. So, I would have never been out that late, you know, with kids in school. You got to be home. They got to go to bed. And it was probably about 9:30. And all of a sudden, the kids kept saying, "Mom, what's that? What's that?" And I look, and there was a huge light and very bright. My brain is thinking there's an explanation. And the kids started getting scareder. And I was thinking, well, there's got to be an explanation. And I'm trying to think, well, what could that possibly be? And we live near a small airport, and I'm thinking, well, maybe.
1994.
There must be a plane or something. But then I realized, no, this thing is too big and it's too low. Well, we had to make a left-hand turn again on a rural road to get to where we lived. Then I realized whatever this light was, it was low and it was following us. I could look at the tree line, and it was right above the tree line following us. Mm. And then I started getting to where, okay, this is not normal. This is something that
no loss of power in the vehicle.
No. And
by sometimes that happens.
Correct. Like
on yes. Some of the encounters.
The kids were just so terrified, and they were laying on the floor and said, "Mom, hurry up, get home." So I took a right-hand turn, and we pulled into my neighborhood. I looked up, and it was gone. And it was right there above the tree line, every inch of the way following us.
No sound?
Nothing.
And I was afraid to tell anybody. The only person I told was my husband, because at the time he was a truck driver and he'd seen some things. That was the only person I told. I was afraid to tell anybody.
Right.
And I went up into Michigan about 2 months later. And there was the local Southwest Michigan newspaper sitting there, and there was an article in there about the people that had seen all these lights and called the police. The police had seen them, everything. Then I felt like, okay, I can talk about it now.
Sure.
So I bought that newspaper and came, hey, everybody. And I remember we went to my family's house on Easter, and I did not want to tell my family. And Ricky brought it up, and they were actually really interested.
Ricky's my brother, in case you didn't know.
Yeah. Okay. What happened? What happened?
It was fucking scary.
Yes.
What color were the lights?
It was like an orange. Mm-hmm. An orange-red, but it was a solid. It's hard to explain. It was so bright, yet it was solid, and it was big.
You cannot understand the brightness of these things.
Yes.
You literally, and just.
My first thought went to fire. It was a bright fire.
Yeah.
Because it was so bright. But then I'm thinking, okay, what would be up in a rural part of Indiana out in the woods on fire in the sky?
Right.
Nothing.
At night.
Yeah. But I'm correct. Still, my brain is not thinking UFO. I'm not thinking that at all.
Right.
I'm thinking there's an explanation, and I'll calm the kids down.
And we live close to an airport, a municipal yes. airport, but still. So it was not abnormal for us to see lights outside. And this was nothing like we had ever
very
seen.
Very big.
It was fucking traumatizing.
Yes. by the time I pulled my driveway, the kids were still laying on the floor. I had to get out. I had mom by the soccer mom minivan. I had to unlock the back door, turn on my back porch light, and hold the back door open while they ran into the house.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I think to sum it up, that we are believers in this room.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
There's just too much stuff that you can't explain.
We will never know everything. But I think as technology advances, we will begin to see more and more. Like mom brought up earlier.
Yes.
The 1950s, they wouldn't have been releasing images of their radar from the Air Force. Mm-hmm. Just wait till I'm living in San Diego and calling you every night. I swear to God, I saw a UFO. I saw a UFO. Or Tijuana fireworks. I don't know.
Right. No, it was the fireworks. I heard it. Whatever, Holmes.
Where's my Colt 45 or whatever? You do it so much better than me.
Los Vatos forever.
Well, like you were saying, Rachel, on like Paranormal Caught on Camera, every week there's something from some place on the globe.
Yeah.
That, and especially when you get the light clusters.
Yeah.
And wasn't not too long ago, they had them over Phoenix. And they had
yeah,
them
the
every
Phoenix
night.
Lights in 97.
Yeah.
I was about to say that. So some other notable ones were the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter in 55, widely reported case. with encounters with aliens near Kelly in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And two families reported seeing strange humanoid creatures outside their home and claimed that they were terrorized by these beings for several hours. The Loveland UFO sighting in 57, the Phoenix Lights,
yep.
which was massive. I mean, it was right over Phoenix.
Over Camelback Mountain.
Thousands of people.
Alice Cooper saw them.
Yeah.
Yep. My main. And my sister lives out there.
Yes. Yeah.
2008, the Stephenville Lights. A mass sighting of strange lights in the sky over Stephenville, Texas. Dozens and dozens of witnesses. The lights were seen for several hours and caused a great deal of excitement. Again, origins really may remain unknown. But the one that was my kicker out of like mass scene things was the Chicago O'Hare UFO in 2006.
Yes.
That was reported at the airport itself. And pilots were seeing it. The tower was seeing it. People looking out were seeing it. And it's just sitting there hovering.
It was on the local news, every single channel. Mm-hmm. And then they realized, I think, that people were getting almost hysterical about it.
Yeah.
So then they were backtracking quite a bit. Well, now they're saying, just like the spy balloon, well, now they're saying that they did identify it. They start backtracking because people are getting very upset. And, you know, there's something about UFOs and religion, because if you're a religious person, you absolutely do not want to believe in UFOs.
Because you want to believe in something else.
Yes. And I think Chicago was getting huge backlash.
I also think that there is something to the water, because I'm looking at this map. Don't know if it's top notch, but the majority of UFO sightings are
near large bodies of water.
Correct. But there are like, no, you got to think of also like one half of Montana has like little to no. You have North Dakota, South Dakota,
what Wyoming. What is the dark blue where there's more sightings?
No, this is all sightings.
Oh.
So you have basically the, let me show you, it's going to make noise when I turn the computer, but half the continent basically.
Yeah.
It's like down the Mississippi, and then you have spots, Denver, which is...
where there's most populated.
Correct. And then you have all along the coastlines,
which is insane. Do you think it's just because there's less people there to report them?
I would say so. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, 100%. But also, if you look...
per capita.
Yeah, if you look at the line, though, you know, the Mississippi...
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, and then you have all of this... But the more people you have, the more sightings you have. Or the more people that are there, the more people are reporting.
I wish you had one of those of the world. Because doesn't it seem like here lately there's been so many reports from pilots in South America? It seems like every time there's a new sighting, because I'll watch for this stuff, it happens in South America.
Hmm.
I think people are reporting it more because you have hardcore evidence that you can present.
Pull the phone out. Exactly. Record it.
Yes, exactly. That's it.
And they can't dismiss it. And that's what we're saying. Like, technology has forced the hand of the government to be like,
exactly.
Okay, well, I mean, here's some stuff.
Literally all cannot be crazy.
Right.
Maybe like 75% of you might be.
But Farmer Bob out in Kansas, and he was the only person to see it.
Right. Just...
we can dismiss him.
Right.
Are Bubba and Billy Bob out fishing 2 a.m?
In Florida.
Yes. And that's the way they would portray people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're getting to our hour mark here.
Yes, we are. We had so much more to say, and I know we did. And I think this is the first one where we've literally like, ooh, it's my turn. Right. I have something to say.
It's always fun. Just shoot the shit and just talk about this stuff. I mean, the odd and the strange. That's what it's about.
You got to do one in Area 51. I would really like to know more about that.
Well, we did one on the bizarre Bob Lazar. Have you heard about Bob Lazar?
Mom, have you not watched that documentary?
I don't know. Have I?
Obviously, on Netflix, watch Bob Lazar documentary. Okay. And
he worked at Area 51.
You're going to be like, Vert de Ferk? Yeah.
Is that the guy that was... trying to contact Art Bell?
No, I know which one. The guy that seems very distraught
yes.
and hung up? No, it wasn't Bob.
Yeah, okay. But I think they confirmed that guy was like a hoax, didn't they?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
But it sounded really real, like he was getting chased.
Yes. Art Bell was believed it.
He can say he was concerned. Love Art Bell.
Yes. I wish like he could live forever and just do the show all the time.
He was awesome.
So Chile, South America is a big hot spot. Yes, I know they're trying to end it.
I'm saying. I don't know why they're seeing so many here lately, but seems like the past couple years. And you know what I think about when I think about that? Remember that movie Signs?
Mm-hmm.
And when they have the video of the alien, it's in South America.
They're going to start coming into South America. They're going to start using the Nazca lines that they made.
Ooh. We need to go to Joshua Tree National Park.
You're going to be right by there.
I know I am.
Oh my gosh. I'm not going anywhere near that.
29 Palms. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we appreciate you listening. Definitely check us out on Facebook. And did you do an Instagram?
Not yet. I never even logged in. Instagram, I'm so sorry. I'm the worst.
Instagram is in progress. So check us out on Facebook at the Abnormal Matters Podcast. You can always reach out to us on our email, theabnormalmatterspodcast@gmail.com. And if you have anything that you want us to look into, anything strange, odd, bizarre, email us. Let us know. That's how we got in touch with June, the Demon Seer. She said, hey, I'm interested in getting on your podcast. I'd like you guys to stop. So, but once again, thanks for listening.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate
Thank you,
you
Mom,
coming over and hanging for out. Joining and us.
Thank
us.
You for having me. Absolutely. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
We know.
All right. We'll catch you next time. Thanks, folks.